Mike. How are you doing?
I'm good, Kevin. Good to be with you again.
Hey, you were talking to me the other day about the role lyrics play in music. Tell me more about your thoughts about that.
Well, I guess this our podcast is talks about how music teaches you lessons in life, in life's lessons, if you will. And one of them is and we've discussed this in the past here and there. Cooperation is one of those characteristics, one of those elements, one of those life's lessons that you learn by being involved in music, by playing music. And of course, when you're playing with other musicians, you're listening to each other and you're giving each other space, and it's a conversation, right? A musical conversation.
Right.
Well, I think one of the, if you will, the great collaboration is between the person who writes the music and the person who writes the lyrics. Especially, I think the singer song or the American songbook era, virtually all those people, Jerome Kern had to have his Oscar Hammerstein. Every Richard Rodgers has to have his Lorenz Hart or Oscar Hammerstein. Ellington never wrote a lyric. He had his Billy Strayhorn, his Irving Mills, his Bob Russell, who wrote the lyrics for Don't Get Around Much Anymore. And then, Hoagy Carmichael worked with Johnny Mercer. He wrote some of his own lyrics as well. But I think most of those songs from that era were collaborations, were cooperations between the music, at the top of the old sheet music things that you used to buy. At the
Sure,
top,
sure.
it said music by and lyrics by.
Yeah, you know, at the university, when we have ensembles perform, this is a kind of like Board of Regents accreditation issue. When we make the programs and we perform a song, we have to list both the composer and the lyricist, even though we're playing instrumentally, So we'll list both of them. I think that's only in the academic setting. Maybe it's only at Georgia State. I always found it odd that we're listing the lyricist, but we're not performing the lyric. But I love this relationship between the person writing the melody, the song, and working in tandem with the lyricist. And there's not a lot of people. We're just talking about the great era of songwriting. There's not a lot of people who do both.
Right. It started, I think, in the, like in the 60s and whatever, when the lyrics were most important during the folk music era. And I think, the simplicity of most of those, of the music of most of those songs would tell you that what the focus was the lyrics. Of course, you've got, you got the king of that era, Bob Dylan, who
Sure.
has now won a Nobel Prize for literature in
I mean, his lyrics are so
2016.
good. You don't even have to un be able to understand what he's singing. There's so much meaning there. Like you don't know if something. When I listen to him, I don't even recognize. I can't understand half of what he's saying sometimes.
Yes, well, that was a
But
problem in
there's
itself, though.
enough that you want to know what the other words are, and then
Yeah.
you listen even harder. I'm a fan of Leonard Cohen, Joni Mitchell.
Oh gosh, yeah.
People love and hate the song Both Sides now from her, but I just think it's perfect both musically and the way the three chapters of the story unfold in the thing.
Yeah.
It's great. I like, there's this thing about how lyrics influence the melody that I think is so important. It may not be as obvious to you know, people who don't compose songs for a living or anything. My dear friend Marcus Prinup, who doesn't sing, I mean, he sings, but he doesn't perform singing or anything like that. But every song he wrote when I was with him, he would write lyrics for it.
Uh-huh.
Not even necessarily good lyrics. He just wrote the lyrics because it made the melodies come out better.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, I think, well, as you know, as a singer, obviously that's my focus, is the lyrics. And I know that, like, as I matured over the years as a singer, what I realized, even if I sang a song, the same song, night after night after night after night, I had to think about those lyrics. I had to think about what the message was, what I was saying, what I was communicating to my audience, or the song was no good. I mean, no matter how many great notes I hit, no matter how perfectly I hit the high notes, whatever, if I wasn't thinking about the lyric and talking and conversing that way with the audience, then the song didn't go over. But if I was thinking about what I was singing, the words that I was singing, that communicated, that connected with the audience. So to me, that's, as obviously as a singer, to me, that's the most important thing. And I'm wondering too, as a instrumentalist, do you ever think about the lyrics of a song as you're playing?
Well, you know, it's funny. So there's a lot of jazz standards that people play that the way they perform it is pretty divorced from the meaning of the lyrics. One of my favorite examples is this song called Softly as a Morning Sunrise.
Uh-huh.
Maybe just think of that title and what it implies. But then you hear these people play it really fast with a lot of energy and a flurry of notes and loud and dramatic. That's exactly convey, you know, that feeling. Or there's another song, Just Friends.
Uh-huh.
Oh yeah, that lyric, when I had my first heartbreak, you know, she dumped me, you know. I had just learned that song. I would sit at home reading through those lyrics, you know, on the verge of tears. Yeah, it's got this line that says, two friends drifting apart, two friends but one broken heart. Like, you know, that's what it was. You know, she just wanted to be friends, that kind of thing. But people play that song like fast and exciting too, even though it's a sad, you know, song about heartbreak. So sometimes you don't think about the lyrics, but when they're my favorite ballads to play, I do think about the lyrics when I'm playing it. It makes it play better. There's this fun story about the great tenor saxophone player Ben Webster, who was playing with jazz at the Philharmonic. And who knows, this story may have changed, and you know, may have changed over time a little bit, but the point of the story is right on the money, which is he's playing he would get one ballad feature a night as this big variety show they had. And he's being accompanied by the Oscar Peterson and other people. And halfway through him playing the melody, he just stops playing. And Oscar Peterson, who was the youngest person there, that was kind of where he got discovered, and he's nervous playing with all his jazz heroes, takes over the melody and finishes the song. And then he's worried that he had done something to make Ben Webster angry or not want to play anymore, you know? So he backstage says, Ben, well, what happened? What did I do wrong? And Ben was, oh, no, you didn't do anything wrong. I just forgot the lyrics. And of course, Ben's not singing. He's playing the saxophone.
Right.
You know, it's a good story that that we use to teach music to other people about music being about a lot more than just the technique of playing. That when you're playing, you're telling a story, you're expressing feelings and stuff to it. And I always find lyrics being present in music. You know, John Coltrane's, I consider his greatest records, this record called A Love Supreme. Saxophone, drums, bass, and piano. McCoy Tyner, Alvin Jones, Jimmy Garrison. One of the greatest records ever, and it's loved by people worldwide who don't even necessarily like jazz, necessarily. He quite famously, one of the melodies in there, he said it to the Lord's Prayer, you know, from Christian churches. And you don't need to know that, but if you sit down and listen to each note he's playing, you know, it fits the lyric. And he didn't, it wasn't like a gimmick. Like, he didn't even tell people that or anything. He just wrote the piece of music, and that's how he went about writing it.
You know, you're all those years that you spent touring with Renee Marie.
Mm-hmm.
She was both sides of the song, right? She was a great songwriter, but her lyrics, when I first met you and learned about her, and I got a CD. Do you remember those CDs?
Cash deposits. Yeah, they're paying like 5% now, Mike.
Yeah, that's not good enough, is it? Anyway, but
I mean, they were paying like a fraction of 1%. But yeah, no, yeah. I mean, CDs, they're still with us a little bit, you know.
Anyway, she's a great lyricist and just a unique concepts of her songs. That CD that I listened to, one of the first pieces, I think it was, might've been the first cut on the CD, where she's talking about some guy breaks into her house and rapes her. And then he stays.
Or does he, you know, that song is called Weekend. And it's a story, but it's never quite clear. It's a story about an unhappy married woman with implications. Maybe she's abused and her having a fantasy, but it's not clear if that's up for the listener. Did she actually have someone break in and rape her, or is this her way of fantasizing a way to escape a marriage in a certain way? It's not necessarily about rape. I really admire that song, but the audiences would have different reactions to it.
I bet.
One of my favorite things about Renee is she, first of all, you know, she came to music as a performer late. She didn't perform until she was 43. She had been Jehovah's Witness, and she started her career there in her 40s from scratch. And also had the wisdom and intelligence and humility to not rely on talent. She worked hard on every part of this. And every time I was with her, she was working on songs or writing lyrics or writing in her diary. And she was participating in, you know, online groups about writing prose, writing lyrics, songwriting things, and then educating herself, reading about it, constantly working on the art of the whole thing and improving. There's several things that she's done lyrically that are impressive.
You know, there are a couple of tunes that come to mind that where the lyrics just really, lyrics just captivated me. You know, when we did our episode on Duke Ellington, we talked a little bit about the song Do Nothing Till You Hear From Me.
Right.
Was it Bob Russell was the lyricist on that? He was the lyricist on Don't Get Around Much Anymore. Mm-hmm. But anyway, as we know, as we discussed, Duke Ellington didn't write lyrics. He took these snippets from his grander initiatives, bigger works.
Don't Get Around Much Anymore is from this beautiful, complex piece he wrote called Never No Lament. And that opening melody, beep, 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 that thing that was a warm-up lick that the great alto player Johnny Hodges used to play. And he kind of built a piece around it, around Johnny Hodges. None of it had anything to do with the witty lyrics of "Don't Get Around Much Anymore." Yeah, you know, that song was actually called, it was this very elaborate, beautiful piece that Ellington wrote based on a melody that Johnny Hodges, the alto player, used to warm up on. And that piece was called Never No Lament. And basically, when he needed money, they would just put lyrics on you know, take the song and put lyrics on it and have a hit. And that's his profits from these songs he would write would support the greater artistic endeavors he had, you know, with the band. But to me, that just highlights the importance of lyrics and how they relate to an audience.
Yeah, one of my favorites of his, and the lyric, we've discussed this before, a little tongue-in-cheek lyric, it's "Do nothing till you hear from me," where he's trying to convince his girlfriend, his wife, or whoever, that he hasn't been messing around. But you can tell from the song.
The very last line is the hook. He says, "Don't do nothing till you hear from me, and you never will.
You'll never hear it from me.
It's a song for ghosting in the modern age of dating, I suppose.
Stepping out to a whole different genre, one of the songs that probably has had the most commentary about the lyric is American Pie. Don McLean wrote that song, and there's been a tremendous amount of conversation. What does this mean? What does that mean? Of course, we know that it starts out with references to the plane crash that killed Buddy Holly and Ritchie Valens in the Big Bopper back in 1959. Supposedly the day the music died is the lyric in the song.
Right.
At any rate, I'll never forget when somebody cornered him, some reporter cornered and said, "Okay, what does American Pie really mean?" And Don McLean's answer was, "It means I never have to work another day in my life."
For me, my generation, I grew up roller skating to Hotel California. I still don't know what that song's about. It doesn't matter. It's the story of it that's going by and everything. It's just interesting how lyrics work, because they're basically poems or stories. It's when you set it to music that we call them lyrics. But, you know, a lot of lyrics could just be put in their own books by themselves. And I've always found it interesting the way a lot of people will write prose, write words, as a tool for different things they want to do, whether you're journaling about what's going on in your life, or writing a mission statement for your next 5 years, your 5-year plan, or brainstorming for, you know, ideas for a product or for a PR or for a band name or whatever. And we're so intricately connected to language. I think the roles that lyrics play in music can also play roles in our lives. And that's how useful they are. I'm just thinking about how many times I've listened to the lyrics of a song as a way of helping myself through a difficult situation.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people, probably perhaps most people, have a set of lyrics that have meant something, that has meant something to them during their lives, and that they recall from time to time.
Yeah, and happy songs too, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, the one thing I don't think works, I once got hired to play a wedding, and the bride and groom insisted that for their recessional, you know, where they marched down, they just got married, they marched down the aisle, they wanted me to play Duke Ellington's Don't Get Around Much of It. I was like, that is not a...
That's not a wedding song.
That doesn't sound like you're saying I do. So you're married, you're not going to get around much anymore. I guess they meant it positive. Like, he's a one-woman man now, but it sure didn't feel that way to me. I think one of the reasons there are so many songs about heartbreak is that it's people listen to that because it makes them feel better. You know, like it's a role that music plays in helping them work their way through whatever they're going through. It's certainly, you know, a song that gets me a whole bunch is Nancy Wilson singing The Masquerade Is Over. And the lyrics to that are great. I had to look up who Pagliacci was. He's the famous crying clown.
Yeah. But,
you know, there's songs like this that we listen to, you know, when we're in a bad place and it's healing. You know, I like this definition of the blues that Albert Murray, famous writer, had. He says, blues is optimism in the face of adversity. And it is. Blues can be sad songs, but you're listening to it. It does make you feel better, whether it's, you know, commiserating or just accepting the situation. You remember like 20 years ago, there were those strings of books called Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, and then something that says it's all small stuff. Yeah. Well, I always thought that Bobby McFerrin song, Don't Worry, Be Happy, is the perfect thing for that.
Yeah.
I could put that jaunty, happy little song on and feel better in just a few minutes, if I allow it to, you know?
So I guess the sort of the lesson learned from this discussion about lyrics is that people have favorite lyrics, or people, maybe they're not even their favorite lyrics, but there are lyrics that stick with them, that mean so much to them. And the cooperation between the composer and the lyricist might be the greatest collaboration in music.
I think, you know, the role that lyrics play, you know, there's a whole field of study you can major in, music therapy. And certainly a big part of that is just understanding that music itself can be a healing force. And if you know that on purpose, you can use it to your advantage. Listen to happy stuff, you know, when you want to feel happy, or sad stuff when you're working through stuff on purpose, you know. Doesn't have to have lyrics, but I certainly think the storytelling part of it connects to us directly.